Welcome to the Hockey Writers Podcast. We're your favorite THW contributors discuss the hottest topics around the NHL and hockey world every weekday, Monday through Friday. Listen daily on iHeartRadio and wherever you get your podcasts. Check out our other great content at thehockeywriters.com. I'm your host, Kyle Knopp, and today I'm joined by Carrie Collins and Christy Flannery. Carrie, Christy, how are you guys doing this Wednesday morning, I guess, still?
Pretty good.
Doing well. Excellent. Thank you for having me.
Well, excited to have you, Christy. Carrie, great to have you. You got game four tonight covering the Colorado Avalanche. So thank you for that. But Christy, very excited to have you on because you are one of our three Professional Hockey Writers Association credentialed writers. And we just had the NHL award show last night. And not only that, but if you are a subscriber to the Morning Skate, you saw her live reaction to the award show in today's issue. So let's jump right into it. Christy, talk to me about this NHL award shows. What were your overall takeaways? And, we got your live reactions. Now, what's your morning after reaction?
I just wish the league did better. Gary Bettman had a conference and was saying how, you know, the league got made the most money this season. And like, you know, the Stanley Cup final viewership is so high. And I just thought they kind of dropped the ball a little bit when it came to the awards between the venue, the players and the people that were in the audience, the very intimate audience, didn't really seem like they wanted to be there. And I just wish they were able to do more with it to make it more enjoyable, because if you're not a hockey fan, let's be honest, you're not watching the NHL awards. It's not even like there's a grab or like a gimmick to kind of get other viewership in. So I just thought it was kind of lackluster a little bit.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm glad you brought up that intimate crowd, because yeah, watching that last night and watching the clips from Keenan's monologue, it just kind of seemed like no one told anyone that they were going to potentially get roasted by being in the audience, because everyone looked on edge once they realized that. And then B, everyone was like, oh no, I'm here with my parents. Like, whatever, what's going to happen? Like, it did just seem like a very odd mix of players and attendance. But hey, you know, that's the NHL for you. Everyone's very awkward off the ice. So, Carrie, I want to get your thoughts on the NHL award show. Was it worth the hype or was it a huge swing and miss?
I don't know if it was a huge swing myth. I agree with the venue and stuff. It just seemed like it was Kenan Thompson doing like a Netflix stand-up type of a theater. But he was funny and stuff. I liked a lot of the stuff that he said. And then, I mean, there was some cool stuff that happened too. The stuff with Chris Snow.
Yeah.
Giving out the Norris Trophy. He was the assistant GM for Calgary that left and is battling ALS, was supposed to live for only one more year, and that was 3 years ago. So that was a really cool moment for me to see, you know, him back up there and stuff, and how he was received with his family and everything. And some of the other presenters and stuff were really cool too. So that was probably my favorite takeaway of the night, was all of the special presenters that they had. But I totally agree with Christy. I think they could do more, you know, like to make this more of a splashier type of event, to try and suck in some more of those viewers that might not be watching the NHL every single night, like a lot of us, but it's a chance for them to sort of kind of broaden their footprint a little bit. And it just doesn't seem like they did a lot to expand that this year with the way that they did it.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. It does seem like all we've been hearing is how the NHL is trying to grow the game, but it didn't seem like they were attempting to grow it outside of the or to the casual fan, at least with the setup last night. And now I'm going to ask you first, Carrie, I have a couple more questions on this for Christy, but do you feel that because of the venue being in the Stanley Cup host city, as opposed to being predetermined to be in Las Vegas, where it can be in an auditorium with a lot more people and maybe be made an event of, kind of caused it to have that more intimate or exclusive feel to it?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't know the logistics behind everything, but doing it that way makes it kind of, I don't know, unless they know in advance, I don't know how they get these venues or if they've got it locked up, like 5 or 6 of them locked down across the country and stuff. But it just seemed like last year it was much bigger, and I think it's because of the crowd. You know, it was in Las Vegas. I get that they want to have all of the players there that they can and stuff, and you've got all of the excitement going on around the Stanley Cup final and things like that. But it did seem like way too intimate for what's supposed to be like their big gala event of the year, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And just to put that out there to our listeners, the last live event was in 2019. So before COVID, everything, and it was being held in Las Vegas annually. So, even before the Vegas Knights, Golden Knights were out there, they held it in Vegas, but it was out there pretty much annually. So it was kind of made into a giant event. I want to say they used to have musical performances, and it was more of like an actual award show, whereas this kind of felt like, yeah, you're getting some people together and then, you know, presenting them with the American Legion Award for, you know, the Employee of the Month or something. It just kind of felt like it was very forced. And and you're right, the venue just kind of felt like they stumbled across it the day before. So Christy, wanted to come back to you. Like I said, in the morning skate this morning, you put together a fantastic live reaction to the show. And a couple of things that stood out to me. One was getting to see some of these players' personalities. Igor Shesterkin struggles with English, but was trying to get through it, and yet they still played him off with the wrap it up music. And then everyone got to see, one of my favorite players, and as a Detroit Red Wings contributor, Moritz Seider. Everyone got to see just how lovable and just such a great human being he is when he told everyone that his parents thought it was more important to go on vacation than come visit him in Florida. So I want to get your thoughts on some of these player personalities that we did get to see last night. And is that good for the game? And what should the NHL do to build on that?
I think it's great for the game. I think that, you know, it's kind of you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, because we see players that show a lot of personality, like a PK Subban, and they kind of get a lot of backlash for it. Yeah. But yet fans are always striving for like these interviews for players to kind of come out of their shell and show that personality. And we know that we have the same cliche hockey answers that we get night in and night out. So I think it was really great that each recipient yesterday really did have like at least one moment where their personality did shine through, with, you know, Igor talking about like where he gets his headbands on Amazon with Emily Kaplan. I'm like, okay, he's just like the rest of us. He shops on Amazon. This is great. You have, you know, Cedar, who was just, I'm a huge fan. What a gem. I was like, he was my favorite moment of the night when he said that about his parents. That was just fantastic.
Oh yeah.
And he was very well spoken, because these are young kids. You have to keep that in mind too. Like, he was very well spoken. You know, Kale coming up saying, you know, hey, how's everyone doing? Great. Like, it was just kind of like a really funny, like loose kind of moment. And you enjoy that. You want to see that as a fan. You want to see that as a member of the media, and kind of, it helps people humanize the players, I think, more, which is something that I think is kind of missing in the game.
Yeah, I totally agree with that from the standpoint of, you're so used to hearing these canned stock answers for the last 30 years from all these guys, especially Cale Makar. He just seems like he's all business. When they interview him during a game, he's all business and everything. And just to see that there's a little more than that, even, you know, from some of these players. But I agree, Moritz was the best part that I saw. And it just is so different when they don't have to say, oh yeah, you know, we've really got to, you know, one period at a time, or
pucks in deep.
The same thing you hear every night. So it's good to see that stuff for sure. I totally agree.
Yeah. Christy, I'm sure you get to play cliche bingo every night when you're at Prudential Center interviewing the guys, because I'm sure it gets recycled throughout the whole season. But yeah, absolutely. I do love getting to see that personality. And like I said, Moritz Seider, we got to see it. Red Wings fans, part of the Grind Line, as we, hosted the podcast weekly. you know, we get to see him every week and get to see his puck personality. He had a show on the Red Wings social media pages this season, and he's just such a great character, and you want to see that in the game. You want to see that be built up. On the flip side of that, seeing Cale Makar and Victor Hedman at that event last night, the night before game four, did that seem a little out of place to you? It seemed a little out of place to me. And so I just want to get your quick thoughts on that. And I think this is why they used to have it in Vegas in the past, because the teams that were still in the final would be able to focus on the game and not have to step out and go do that. But Carey, was it a little odd seeing two members of the Stanley Cup final playing teams there last night?
Yeah, it was a little for me. It was kind of like, gosh, these guys aren't done, you know, like there's still work to do. And I don't know why they can't push it back another week or whatever, but I mean, I didn't think it was going to be as, I guess, out of place and odd as it was when I saw them. And then I was like, okay, you know, you're kind of like, geez, these guys just played a game last night. Now they got to play tomorrow. And these, you know, these poor guys go sit by each other.
Probably taking about 20 photos together all night, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it's just kind of like, they're still in the middle of, you know, that's the best part. One of the best parts about hockey is these guys don't really run into each other until they shake hands after the series. So yeah, just kind of seeing them there, like it, when they're still, I mean, they're just like, it sort of feels like this series just kind of got started, you know, a couple of nights ago with Tampa Bay. You know, if they don't win that game, they're in deep trouble. So, it's been so close and so tight. I mean, even like it's a coin flip. I don't know who's going to win tonight, but it was just odd to see a couple of players like that. You know, like you said, having to get a bunch of photos taken.
Yeah, it was really odd and to me seeing them, because it did seem like, you know, they should be, you know, I don't want to take this away from them. They're human. They deserve a night off. They should have a chance to unwind before, you know, a stressful game four. But, you know, Christy, we just talked about being important to build the players' personalities. Is it different when those players are still playing for the Stanley Cup?
I gotta be honest. I know that a lot of people were bothered by it on Twitter. It didn't really bother me as much. I mean, the show started at 7, it ended at 8. It's not like this was like a 11 o'clock, you know, event where, you know, you have to worry about them, you know, doing that and then playing the next night. So I didn't really get bothered by it. I think maybe the awards should be, they should do the awards once the playoffs are finished. I think the timing of everything was a little off. Maybe you shouldn't have it in the middle. If you're going to do it in the middle like that, don't make it an event. Just do what you were doing with the other awards, where you're just kind of getting a player like on Zoom for like 10 minutes and then you can move on with life. So it didn't really bother me. It didn't really bother me. I mean, what are you going to do?
Honestly, it didn't bother me either. It kind of caught me off guard at first that they were there. But it was kind of funny. And then at the same time, you know, Keenan even made a joke about it. And you know, them being there and not trying to go too crazy that night if they were to win. So, it's pretty funny, but I want to talk about that win, because both of those guys were up for the Norris Trophy voting and one of them won it. And I think he probably shouldn't have. So I want to talk about Roman Josi getting robbed, losing the Norris by 25 points. He received 3 fourth place votes and had one fewer total vote than Makar, meaning that there was one sports writer out there that didn't think Roman Josi was the top five in defenseman this year after putting up 96 points, the first time a defenseman put up over 90 points in 30 years. What is going on here, Christy? I'm starting with you. You're part of this esteemed group of writers. You voted for Roman Josi.
I voted for Roman Josi.
I was going to say, was it? Were you the one?
It was not.
No, absolutely not.
I'm going to be honest. We are not
revoking Christy's credentials today.
I'm going to be honest. I actually had, I think, Victor Hedman as my fifth. I'm going to be really honest.
That's okay.
It was Roman Josi was number one and Cale Makar was number two. And we all know, if you've heard me talk on any podcast, I absolutely hate the Norris Trophy, because I feel like it's just, there should be two different awards. There should be one for offensive defensemen and then actual stay at home defensemen. And I actually, before I voted, a couple of weeks before, I actually talked to a current NHL defenseman about it. And I shared my opinion on it. And he made a really good point. He was like, it's about having the most impact on all areas of the ice. It's not just being in front of your net. And he goes, at that point, you go, and you have to think too, do I think Roman Josi deserved the award? Yes. But like I wrote in the newsletter, it's kind of apples and oranges, because it's not that Cale Makar, I don't think, necessarily didn't deserve it. And I think a key point when you look at both of them is everything in Nashville runs through Roman Josi. We all know this, but he does not get the tough defensive matchups. That job goes to Matthias Ekholm. When you look at Cale Makar, he does everything. We saw him go up against Connor McDavid in the Western Conference final. And to that regard, I kind of do give Makar an edge a little bit, because he has the tougher assignments than Josi. But if you're looking at offensively, yes, Roman Josi absolutely deserved this award. Did he get robbed? There's absolutely an argument for it. Did Cale Makar not deserve it? I'm not going to say that.
No, that's a great point. I mean, Cale Makar is certainly a fantastic defenseman. And as we have all seen, he plays all over the ice. I mean, he's basically a fourth forward out there. But the first defenseman to score 90 plus points in 30 years, I mean, that's got to count for something, right? And to have three people say there were three defensemen better than him, and one to say there he wasn't even the top five. I mean, we should be calling for those the heads to roll, right?
Well, I think it's worth noting that, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I think it's worth noting that Roman Josi did get the most first overall picks. He did get he did have the most first overall pick selection, votes, whatever. Yeah. Thank you, votes. I couldn't even think of the word. so that is worth noting. And I think too, when I looked at, I think it's also how you look at the awards and how you interpret them, because I also had Roman Josi in my top five for the Hart Trophy.
Yeah.
Which might be controversial, but I'm like, but again, if you're looking at who's the most important to their team, there's nobody more important than Roman Josi and Juuse Saros to the Nashville Predators.
No, I absolutely agree that. And that was part of my next argument, was the fact that I don't believe that the Nashville Predators make the playoffs without Roman Josi's season last year. Obviously, absolutely they don't make the playoffs without Juuse Saros' season either, but they certainly do not make the postseason without Roman Josi's season. So to me, I think absolutely, you know, he even finished sixth in the Hart voting overall. So, I mean, there's very good reason to be up there. I don't see Cale Makar, or sorry, never mind. Cale Makar was at eighth overall for the Hart. I just missed his name. So, I mean, he got some votes as well. But to me, last year, Adam Fox won this trophy over Victor Hedman when I thought Hedman had a much better season and played a much better overall all-around game, but they gave it to Fox because of the offensive factor. Now, this season, you have a defenseman that scores more than 90 points, 96 points, first time in 30 years, and it doesn't go to him with the offensive factor. So I just think that there's been a lot of differences or a lot of inconsistencies in the voting. And then the fact that the biggest thing to me is we work at the Hockey Writers, right? We have a ton of professional journalists who put in the hard work and cover their team and would love to be part of the PWHA. And they don't have a shot at it, but one person that is a voting member didn't even pick Josi in the top five. Like, that to me is mind blowing.
And you got to think too, though, are you going to be biased to the team that you cover?
And I think there absolutely is bias because of this. Like, I feel like, you know, someone likely picked, you know, maybe it was the one that gave Charlie McAvoy the number one overall vote. You know, maybe that person just really doesn't like Nashville or Josi and decided to leave him off their ballot. Or maybe someone in Colorado that wanted Cale to win, you know, left Josi off the ballot. Now, if that's the case, is that, you know, okay, we could get into a whole argument on a whole podcast on this, but to me, that is where I struggle the most with this issue, is because we have so many great writers that we work with consistently, and someone, you know, did they do this because they are being petty, or do they seriously believe that a 96 point producing defenseman doesn't deserve to be in the top five. I mean, that just blows my mind. So I don't want to spend too much more time on this because honestly, we could go all day.
So just one quick thing I wanted to add in there is that was the biggest problem is him not being on some ballots and it's or a ballot. And it's like, I mean, you look at poor Victor Hedman. I mean, he has this season, any other year, he wins that thing by a mile. And then he's got to deal with these two guys. When they announced Cale as the winner, I was surprised. I wasn't like, you know, tipping over my table in my house because Roman Josi got robbed. I mean, I just thought it was neck and neck between those guys the whole way. I wasn't surprised at how close the vote was, but I was surprised that Makar won it. And just because of the season that Josi had. And I mean, there's always going to be an awards where you scratch your head. And those two guys were probably a horse apiece, you know, during the season. Josi ended so strong. Cale started so strong. And then it just seems like, you knew it was going to fall somewhere like that, where it was going to be super close, but seeing Josi get the most first place votes and not win just kind of surprised me.
So let me ask you this question, Carrie, because I was actually just thinking about this. If the vote totals were flipped, so say Roman Josi ended with 16-31 with 92 first place votes, 98 second place votes and 5 third place votes, which are all the votes allotted. Excuse me. And Cale Makar finished with 16-06 with 98 first place votes, 76-17 and 3 fourth place votes. Would you still look at that voting and say, wow, that's interesting. Cale Makar got more first place votes, but ended up losing this award. Or would you look at that and say, yeah, that makes sense. Roman Josi was top three on everyone's ballot. And even though he didn't get enough first place votes, he deserved to win that.
Yeah, the biggest thing I would have taken from that was, wow, Cale got all more first place votes. Because I thought Josi should have won, too. I mean, it's just whether I agree that, you know, you've got like the selfie trophy for the best defensive forward. I don't know if they, you know, split this up a little bit, but because it's really just turned into an offensive award. I mean, you know, just look at the last 3 years. It's the except for this year, I guess you got the guy with 96 points that didn't win it, but. I was just surprised. I mean, that is just tons and tons of points. And I mean, he's getting Hart Trophy votes and stuff, but yeah, if the vote was flipped, I wasn't surprised that Josi got more first place votes. Like I said, I was really surprised that somebody left him off. And
yeah,
I would love, yeah. I don't know if those get released or who voted where. I'd love to find out who that person was and just ask them their rationale. Why? Who are the five people you think are better than Roman Josi?
Yeah. Like, and if
who
if
are that person... they? And I would love to hear, I mean, and I'm not just being like snarky. I'm just saying, no, I'd love to hear, okay, tell me why, because I'm interested in finding out how that person thinks following these lines when, I mean, both of those guys get over 90 first place votes and it's, and somebody leaves them off. It just seems either peculiar or, but there's a lot that goes into it. Like you said, maybe there's politics. Maybe it's a guy on the East Coast that doesn't watch any West Coast games, doesn't get a chance to see these guys play as much. I don't know. I mean, there could be a million different reasons for it, or you just don't like Nashville. Maybe, I don't know. there's a lot of people too that go, well, the team was better, you know, like, this guy's, you know, Colorado's team was better than Nashville or whatever. I don't know why that plays into it because we're talking about who's the most valuable. And like you said, they're nowhere without him. I mean, if you can't take him, you know, you can't just pull him out of the lineup, but it was such a huge, like, groundbreaking season. And it was
absolutely
kind of a surprise to me.
And to your point there, you know, every argument you just made for Cale over Roman in that little, spot there was basically the flip last year when it was given to Fox over Hedman. So, you know, it's one of those things, like Christy said, apples and oranges. You have two different styles of defensemen. You know, obviously one is a lot more flashy and gets a lot more eyeballs drawn to him just by the nature of the way he plays. So I think that definitely has something to do with it. But in terms of what you said about asking that person, you know, who are those five players that are better than Roman Josi? I want to go out and invite that person onto this podcast right now. If you are listening, which you should be, please reach out to us and come on. I want to hear who your top five are, because I am absolutely just flabbergasted by how that turned out. And so, like I said, I could spend hours on this. There's no need to get into it. We are not going to change anything. I don't get a vote. Christy already voted for the person I thought should win. So it is what it is. But yeah, I just thought it was really funny. And I think if those votes were flipped, we might be saying, you know, oh, that's odd. Kale McCarr got more first place votes, but Roman deserved it. Happened in 2015 or 16 with Erik Karlsson. Oh, well, but now we have something to discuss on the podcast.
Yeah. I mean, so you have Christy saying, you know, I had Josi in my heart trophy. And she said that might be controversial. If you think that's the best defenseman, I don't think that's controversial.
Not at all. If you think that's the best defenseman, and that was one of the person, sorry, that was one player that was completely valuable and integral to their team, then absolutely they deserve the MVP award.
Yeah. And I know you want to wrap this up, but I will just say it is very, very stressful to vote. It's very, very stressful. Oh, yeah,
responsibility.
If you're covering one team, like I sat down and actually researched other players, because I didn't watch as many teams as closely as I did the Devils. So there was research that went in, and like, to your point, there might've been something that I missed that it's like, oh, well, this is so obvious. I watch this team all the time. Well, I don't. So I have to take the time and kind of do what I think is best. So that's my last point, is it is very, very stressful. It's not as easy as it is when you're on TV and you're like, oh, well, why didn't this person win? It's not that easy.
Well, you're one of the good ones, Christy, and you're one of the ones that puts in the hard work day in and day out. I feel like this is going to come, and I'm going to completely speculate here, but to me, this is that guy that asked Nathan MacKinnon last year if it sucked to lose in the playoffs. Remember that when they lost last year in the post game conference, he goes, does this suck? Like, yeah, no crap, dude. Like, yeah, it does. But so that's the last point on this. We'll move on. So Carrie, we have you on the show today. You cover the Colorado Avalanche. They are up 2-1 going into game four tonight. So let me ask you this. What are the keys to game four for Colorado and to take a 3-1 series lead heading back to Denver?
Yeah, I think this 7-0 game two sort of woke up the giant there going into game three.
Don't poke the bear.
Yeah, and I mean, you look and both teams, again, just like in game one, both teams like right away in the first period, I mean, they're in it. Like you can tell just from when the puck drops, these guys are like ready to go. Where in a couple of the games, maybe against Edmonton for Colorado, Edmonton just seemed like, oh crap, we got a game tonight, you know, and it was good to see them bounce back. Tampa bounce back just to get a series because, you know, as a hockey fan, I selfishly, we've talked about this before, Kyle, I want to see seven games. I want to see six overtimes in the game seven and just to get as much as I can from these two teams. But I think a big key for them was they really weren't that bad in that game. It's just they piled up a bunch of shots. They kept, you know, they've had more scoring chances and it just, or quality chances, and it just looked like the difference in that game was the goalie. You know, Vasilevsky finally turned into Vasilevsky from the last two Stanley Cup finals, not from the last two games. And It was night and day. I mean, 37 stops. JT Compher's probably still having nightmares about, you know, there was three
that
or four
right
chances.
Leg, two of them. Yeah.
And it's just, you know, they're getting the opportunities from the secondary scorers, you know, the depth scoring and stuff. The defensemen are still there. The special teams were still there. It was just Vasilevsky just absolutely smothered them. When it was 5-on-5, I mean, 30 saves, 5-on-5, you know, even strength. They've had the two power play goals from Gabriel Landeskog, but I just think they just have to keep, if I'm them, I don't really change that much. They just have to keep doing what they're doing. But geez, on the back end, all of a sudden the forecheck arrived for Tampa Bay and it was like, look out. So And it seemed like Colorado had, particularly in game two, their forecheck was just unstoppable. Like,
yeah,
Tampa couldn't get it out of the zone. Like, I mean, it was like a men's league game. There's times where you're like, geez, are these guys going to have to almost ice the puck just to get like a breath of in their own zone? But I mean, the goaltending was bad, and that's probably the biggest difference. The key is that Kempers just absolutely has to be better. And I mean, even Francouz gave up the power play goal to Corey Perry, I suppose, but I'd be surprised if Kemper doesn't start. But the big key for them is they got to shore up a little bit defensively, because game two is probably the exception, not the rule.
Yeah.
You're not going to shut these guys out probably again.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And you know, I think that you brought up a good point that it's going to have to be Kemper. I'm assuming he's coming out, they're going to go back to him. I mean, Bednar's held it very close to his chest the last couple of days. But you would assume that's Kemper's career still coming out. But yeah, he has to play better. And the Lightning, like, I'm glad you brought that point up about the Lightning's key change from game two to game three was just getting the puck out of their zone. They didn't give the Avalanche a chance to set up. And you could see that. Yeah, the Avalanche jumped out to an early 1-0 lead, almost a 2-0 lead. But once Tampa settled down in their own zone, started getting that puck out, and then got that forecheck, that neutral zone forecheck, that offensive zone forecheck going, I mean, they looked like the team that won the cup the last 2 years, and not that team in game two. So great points. And I think you're right. Avalanche need to continue to fire on the power play. They hit at 50% last game, but they need to get those chances. And yeah, so Chrissy, I want to get your thoughts. I know you cover the New Jersey Devils, but I want you to step in the shoes of the Tampa Bay Lightning and let me know what is the Lightning's keys to game four, and how can they pull off another victory to send the series back tied?
I don't even know. Like, I can't, like, this series, I just can't. I at this point, I can't predict anything. I don't know what is going to happen. It is like Goliath versus Goliath, and I'm just here to just enjoy it. I don't even know. Like, I just feel like this is a series where, as long, like, each team just needs to be their best. They need to be at 100%. If one drops to 98%, they're going to lose. It's that kind of matchup.
So what do you think the biggest takeaway from game two to game three was for the Lightning, and how can they build off of it?
But, like, I don't know. I'm not surprised. Like, we all kind of saw this with the Rangers. Like, Tampa, started out slow, and it's like you woke up the beast, and now here you are. So I don't think there's any surprise. At no point did I think Tampa was going to get swept or lose two games in Tampa. That just was not going to happen. I think for the Lightning, the biggest thing is Vasilevskiy. What Vasilevskiy are you going to get? Are you going to get game one and game two, or are you going to get game three?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I think we all are expecting the game three Vasilevskiy to be back. He seemed to finally turn that on. And for whatever reason this year, the first two games just haven't been great. Besides that, the Panthers series, in which the whole team just absolutely shut down Florida's offense. But I think you're right. I think as long as the Vasilevskiy of Monday night shows up, the Lightning are almost unbeatable, or at least in very, very small spurts. But to me, the biggest key, I think, was the shots on goal aspect. The Lightning only had 16 shots in that game too, and almost zero from the middle of the ice. And it seemed like they just did a much better job of getting to that middle of the ice and generating those chances. So, I agree with all of you. I think the keys for me are Avalanche, Kemper's got to show up, and the team just needs to keep that relentless offensive zone pressure. And then for the Lightning, Vasilevskiy has to be Vasilevskiy, and the offense has to generate shots from the middle of the ice. So I think it's just basic hockey right now, right? You got to rely on your best players to be your best players, and your offense to create opportunities. And if those two things don't happen, then, it's hard to win games, and especially against, facing the team on the other side of the rink there.
Yeah. And it's important too, when you saw Tampa Bay, they were all after game two, nobody was very happy, of course, but it was like, that was just one game.
Yeah.
Like, okay, we lost one more game, if 7-0 or 4-3, they both only count as one game. So we're going back home. And then, like, you could tell right away that was erased. Like, nobody cared about that at all. And it'll be interesting to see Colorado, how they bounce back. I mean, that was really only – that's only their third loss in the playoffs.
First on the road. Up. Yeah.
Yeah, and first on the road. So it was like, if they can bounce back like that too, I mean, I agree with Christy. Nobody thought this was going to be a sweep if they did. If they did – that's the guy that left – Roman Yossi off his ballot, but
yeah, because he's the Colorado homer. That's, we figured it out.
Yeah, for sure. But then I just think that we're probably in for a longer series. And this is just such a critical game. And I don't know. I mean, I write stuff for THW Bets too, and like I said, you know, this game's kind of a coin flip. I picked Tampa, but. Which almost ensures that Colorado will win tonight. But I just think that they're so close right now and they're both still figuring it out. And I don't know. I'm just pretty excited for the rest of this series.
Don't worry, Kerry. I'm going to go put money on Colorado right now, which will automatically ensure that Tampa Bay will then win. Because my bets, the first two games were absolutely off, not even close. And so I didn't even put anything down on game three. And you know what? I think this is going to be just like the Western Conference final. I'm done touching it because I can't predict this one either. It's absolutely, like you said, a coin flip, which as a fan and as a podcast co-host is great because it gives us a lot of content to talk about and it gives us a lot of fun, you know, hockey viewing pleasure, but yeah, it's absolutely hard to predict. So any last thoughts on game four? Kerry, let's do this. What's your prediction for the game? And just to show that I'm, going to be bad at this, I'm going to go 3-2 Tampa Bay overtime winner.
Oh, wow. That's pretty in depth. There so many goals have been scored in this series. I just think, we're probably looking at another, 4-3.
6-5 or.
Yeah, no 8-6 like in Edmonton. But I just think that there's a lot of goals getting scored. Both these offenses are really putting it together. And it just seems like, all these games are going to be 4-2, 4-3, 5-3 or something with toss in empty netters or whatever. But I just think Tampa, better at home. That last change is such a huge deal. The only thing they generated was those power play goals. And I mean, McKinnon still had his half dozen shots on goal, but didn't really feel like that the big guns were really generating that much unless they had the man advantage. So I just think Tampa with that last change at home, it's a better advantage, with that Cirelli line out there against them. So I just think Tampa's going to probably tie it up and it'll probably be 4-3, 4-2 around there somewhere.
Okay. 4-3, 4-2 Tampa Bay. I like that. Christy, over to you. Thoughts on game four.
I'm going to play devil's advocate. I'm going to say that both goaltenders are going to like really be sharp, especially Colorado knowing what happened in game three. So I'm going to say that it's going to be like a 1-0 or 1-2 game.
Love it. Who's getting the victory?
Oh God, don't do this to me.
Okay. I won't.
Devil's I have no idea. It's going to be devil's advocate. That's all I know.
1-0 or 2-1. The winner are the hockey fans. Can you at least tell me if it's going to be overtime or not? I need to know.
Why not? Who doesn't like that? Sure. You got to give the people what they want. We're going to go overtime. We're going to go double overtime.
Ooh. Christy, love it. Thank you. I'm putting money on overtime game right now. All right. Moving on. To stay on time today, we're going to jump right into our articles of the day. So I'm going to go first. My article today, I picked a kind of a homer article just because this is a fun subject. I love this subject. But this one's by Andrew Forbes, and it is titled, Two of the Cheap NHL trades ever. It talks about two trades that were done for a very minimal amount of money. And the one that I think everyone knows, or at least every Red Wings fan knows, is when actually both of these kind of happened, but Ray Shepard was shipped for $1. But the biggest one was Chris Draper getting traded from the Winnipeg Jets for $1. $1. And Draper would go on to win multiple cups in Detroit and play such a huge role, leading them to four Stanley Cups in 97, 98, 2002, and 2008. And just what a steal for $1. So I think even in the exchange rate or the inflation, I think you're still getting a heck of a deal there. So both of those were to the Red Wings. The first one was Ray Shepard from the Sabres to the Rangers for $1. The photo they used of Shepard was him in a Red Wings picture. So got confused there. But the one that I really, really stuck out to me and I really wanted to touch on was that Chris Draper from Winnipeg to Detroit for $1, because holy cow, did he help shape the landscape of Detroit hockey. So again, two of the cheapest NHL trades ever by Andrew Forbes. Check that out on thehockeywriters.com. Carey, coming over to you. What is your article of the day?
Yeah, my article of the day is Rangers' Condrey Miller becoming a force on defense by Brian Abate. This is a guy that, really caught a lot of my attention during the postseason. And I just remember seeing him earlier in the season and I was like, wow, this guy's really gotten better. And then to read this story, he really takes it through Miller's slow start. And then he hasn't really had that many sweeping roller coaster ups and downs. He's just sort of steadily improved his game and added these little bits to it as he's gone along. And that's kind of for a guy like me that doesn't see them every night, it was really cool to see a story about this when he was a guy that I really kind of recognized, in the playoffs. He caught your attention. Yeah. So to just go through all the different things and how he's, what he did, throughout the regular season, and then just how he finished so strong and then jumped up and became one of their top D-men in the playoffs, I think. And it was really it's really a good read, and it's good insight to, just the big picture of, hey, here's a overhead look at what this guy was able to do this season. And then going forward to what they need from him and how he needs to be more physical or whatever, things like that. So just a good all around, all encompassing look at, a player that really kind of stepped up this whole season for New York.
No, I completely agree. Condrey Miller has been quite the force this year as a 22-year-old. He had a great season. I live out on the East Coast, so I get to see a lot of East Coast games more than the West Coast. So I pay attention a lot more to the Eastern Conference as well. But a lot of people really started seeing him come out in the playoffs, but even heading into the playoffs, I noticed his progression this season. Very consistent player, very steady player, very even keeled player. And as a 22-year-old, that's something exciting to see for Rangers fans, because they have a good young squad and they are going to make some deep runs in the upcoming seasons. Absolutely. Great article, Carey. All right, Christy, over to you. What is your article of the day?
I selected Devils Should Be Willing to Move Second Overall Pick for Bruins Pastrnak by my colleague, Matt Grizel.
A Devils article?
I know. I had to stay home for this one. Because you know what? We all know it's speculation season. That is what we're in the middle of until the draft really happens. And it seems that the Devils are attached to any available player at this point. anybody who potentially is on the move, the Devils are right there, according to the rumors and the insiders and everything else. So it's just absolutely ridiculous. But Matt did a great job with this article. And there are, if the Devils are going to move the second overall pick, which is a top, my opinion does not matter, but there are certain caliber of players that are worthy of that. And Pastrnak is one of them. And the Devils are looking for wingers. So it's a really good article and he makes some really good points. So that is my article of the day.
First off, Christy, your opinion absolutely matters. It's why we have you on the show. It's why the Professional Hockey Writers Association gave you a vote, because they knew you wouldn't leave people off the ballot. And because, you're one of my morning skate crew. So of course your opinion matters. Absolutely. But no, I agree. We all love speculation season, especially if you're a writer of a team that is tied to every player, because then you can just pick a name out of a hat and say, mm-hmm. well, this is why they're going to come to the Devils. But it's fun. It is fun to speculate. And I think moving Pasternak would be a good move for the Bruins if they decide to go in rebuild mode. And we actually talked about this a little bit on yesterday's podcast. Go back and listen if you haven't already, but we talked about, are the Bruins in a spot to where they might be in a rebuild mode coming up soon? So it'll be really interesting to keep an eye on, you know, the Bruins. They have some players recovering from injuries or surgeries this offseason. They have a lot of free agent questions, and they're in that kind of window of, do we try to win now or do we build for the future? So great call out on your article. Like you said, these are a ton of fun, and I do want your opinion, Christy. Are the Devils moving that second overall pick, or are they staying put?
I feel like my answer to everything this summer is I have no idea. To a certain degree, the Devils, because I'll try and keep this really short. The Devils are in a situation where they are looking to improve. That we all know. But at yes. what point, what defines a successful season for the New Jersey Devils next year? Are you looking to just, you know, fight for a wild card spot? Are you looking to win a first round? Like, a team can't go from what the season they had to a Stanley Cup contending team. So if you're yes. still in that slow, but like ending of the rebuild, you don't give up the second overall pick. But if you're in your head, you're thinking, no, I'm going to put together a team and I'm going to, you know, fight in, not only get in the playoffs, but fight for the playoffs, then to bring in an established player like Pasternak or Nylander makes sense. So you have to look at it as, what do the Devils define as success for the 2022-23 season?
And that is why we asked for your opinion, because that was fantastically said. Thank you for that, Christy. And also, I think you should just start playing your clip of you and Dougie Hamilton, of him asking if you had a question. And he goes, and you say, it's my first day.
It was my first day.
You should just play that on a loop all summer. So then you don't have to keep saying, I don't know what's going to happen.
it's only my first day, guys. I'm going to be saying, I don't know how long I'm going to be saying it, but it's only my first day.
I love it. I love it. Well, thank you both for joining us today. And thank you for listening to this episode of the Hockey Writers Podcast. Listen to new episodes Monday to Friday on iHeartRadio and wherever you get your podcasts. And make sure to check out our other great content at thehockeywriters.com. From Kyle Knopp, Carey Collins, and Christy Flannery, this has been the Hockey Writers Podcast.